exercise physiology relates to how the systems and the cells of the body respond to both acute exercise stimuli and how they adapt over time to chronic training stimulus.
So how is that then tracked? How is that put into practice for those who play sport?
Yeah, well, you can look at a whole body model of how the overall organism functions, or you can look at specific systemic physiology, so how the heart or the lungs or the hormonal or the musculoskeletal system responds. And you can have measures of either that systemic level or as just a whole body outcome or a whole body performance marker.
Let's look at an example. So it can be aside from tennis, it can be anything. What's the benefit from using it?
So you can, say, from a start of pre-season to end of pre-season, get a range of tests, either in the field or in a laboratory, determine how the athlete responds to a particular exercise intensity or a workload, and see how they then adapt. So see how successful that training program is, benchmark players for their physiological state, as well as, more importantly, their performance outcomes, and track them over time to monitor whether they're adapting appropriately, whether they're overtraining, whether they're undertraining, and then adjust the program accordingly.
Looking at tennis in particular, what are the biggest demands in the sport?
Yeah, tennis is a complex one. It's essentially a skill-based sport, and any skill-based sport requires prolonged, ongoing, high repetition of those skilled movements. Right, the movement competencies is what it's termed, but the development of ground strokes, of serves, that takes time, that takes exposure to training, and it takes large volumes of skill repetition. But that skill repetition, if it's done in a non-competitive or a non-physically demanding way, won't develop the physiological or physical capacities. You need high speed, high power, okay? Because the actual key outcomes of tennis are to produce high power and high force for velocity through the ground stroke. You need high aerobic capacity because matches have long durations and they're consecutive days and repeated matches over many days. So you need fatigue resistance. You also need the neuromechanical and balance control, because footwork and patterns to set up for the ground stroke are critical. So, you know, if you train all of those independently, you're already at probably 25 hours a day of training, which is obviously impossible. So then you need to be aware of what the athlete can actually handle, and then appropriately train all those different capacities and demands in only a couple of sessions or two or three sessions a day with adequate recovery between them. So the diverse demands make it quite complex. And so then how you meet all those demands in enough training that doesn't overtrain is the million-dollar question.
How does tennis fare? I know each sport has its own physical demands, but with tennis, even as what you were saying there, it's each and every area that they have to be so good and proficient at, because they're running around the court, they're making really acute movements, but then they have to have real power behind it. Matches can go on for upwards of 4 hours.
Yep.
So how does it compare in terms of its demand?
Yeah, in some ways it's probably not that it's irrelevant to compare, because you only train for the competition, you know. And a lot of sports have suffered from the idea of, oh, well, that sport's very fit, so we should copy that sport or how that sport trains. But the reality of training is that you want to prepare that athlete for the competition demands that athlete will meet. Tennis does capture a range of demands, but it probably doesn't exacerbate some of those demands like other sports. So AFL will run 15 to 18 kilometres and much more higher intensity running. Okay, rugby will have its collision based but with a lower volume. Tennis has those acute musculoskeletal demands, particularly through the serve and through hip rotation for ground stroke, as well as the shoulder, and then have, you know, a radius of probably 3 to 5 meters where all the movements are in. But those movements are not high velocity or high speed, but they're very high acceleration and deceleration. So that's kind of the specific demands that you're trying to develop in your training that an athlete can perform in a competition, as you say, for upwards of 5 hours, and sometimes on consecutive days or multiple days, you know, with limited recovery.
When we're talking about endurance in tennis and talking about, you know, surviving the duration of the match, what exactly are they doing in training to prepare for that? Or is it just this like coalition of everything that they have to do to be able to survive because it's so demanding?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, training should theoretically prepare you for the worst situations you'll find in competition. The worst situation you'll find in tennis competition is a bit hard to replicate because, say, if you look at if the truly elite level, you could have at a Grand Slam, if you're wanting to win a Grand Slam, you have to play, say, 7 matches within 13 days. Any one of those matches could be upwards of, say, 5 hours, normally 3 to 5 hours. Within that 3 to 5 hour match, you'll hit potentially 1,000 ground strokes plus serves, and those ground strokes need to be above 100 kilometers per hour. Okay, so, and then the movement will be around about 6 or probably 5 to 8 kilometers within that single match, then repeated over multiple days. So to train for that is very, very difficult. Just the sheer volume of capacities and elements you need to train. So within any given training day, a key outcome for a tennis player is stroke play. Right? So the repetition of stroke play is critical. But then if you try and train that isolated, just on court, just with the key repetition, then you're not going to necessarily train your aerobic capacity, or you won't necessarily train speed and power. So if you then try and train them separately, that's two, you know, and you train them together, then you're training two different energy systems and two different ways to recruit muscle, and you're either not going to train them effectively, or you need to separate them, in which case you're now up to 3 hard training sessions a day, which is not going to work. So the perfect world is to then collapse most of those ideas or most of those training into one key session, maybe 2 key sessions, and then that comes down to how you prescribe your drills. So if your training drills on court are fundamentally just standing and hitting in one similar position with limited movement, you're not going to train those movement abilities. But if you start creating different drills that sequence one another, that train both the ability to hit, the ability to hit in different positions, as well as start taxing movement demands and aerobic capacity, then you can start to get, you know, not the magic potion of all in one, but you can start training multiple factors in the one session, or in, you know, less than 3 or 4 sessions a day, which is impossible to do.
How about time off the court? How important is rest in, say, a period of, you know, it's however many matches over a short period? How can they go from such extreme conditions on the court to them relaxing and not completely exhausting themselves?
Well, there's probably 2 parts to that. One is from a training perspective, where tennis players will actually do a lot of off-court training as well. And so they may then additionally train, say, aerobic capacity. Because of the demands of tennis on court, sometimes it's difficult to really tax the aerobic energy system at maximal levels. You can get fatigue resistance from hitting for long durations, but that doesn't necessarily improve your aerobic capacity. So off-court, tennis players will often then try and get off their legs. So it's on the bikes, on the steppers, just aerobic conditioning that doesn't involve body weight. Or separate to that, it's musculoskeletal conditioning, so strength and conditioning, but not necessarily heavy lifting. So it's more training the weaker muscles of any joint. Okay, so that's one part of a lot of training happens off court to really focus on targeted areas. In match conditions, and on particularly on tour, it becomes a slightly different issue, because if you're playing regularly, then that time between is ideally recovery time. But if you use it too much as recovery time, then you lack training time. So when you're in tournament mode and you're playing regularly, winning or losing, if you're not able to train, then over a period of time, match play doesn't necessarily make you fitter. It hardens you for match play, which is critical. So there's a real balance when in tournament mode between having recovery because you need recovery from that match load, you know, and then or missing training because you're in a recovery mode too much. So that's a real balance depending on the athlete, depending on the tournament schedule, depending on the type of match.